Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Madhouse Podcast. My name is Ray, and this is my podcast. Today is kind of special because it's our mid-season episode. And what's really great about this is, one, we've made it to 12 episodes, but two, I've learned a lot about myself, and I hope that you guys have learned something about me. And I feel like in the spirit of podcasting, I'm going to talk about something that I find deeply personal, as well as something kind of scary to even talk about, really. And that's money and failure in conjunction with mental health. And I just want to say first too that this is not advisory. I'm not trying to give people monetary advice whatsoever. This is only my experiences. Once again, all of these podcasts are in my experience and are never meant to reflect anything beyond my experience. So money, right? Who wants it? Who needs it? Money is really scary. I've never really had a lot of jobs. I actually didn't have my first, like, real job until I was 23, which is really late. I've had some jobs before that, but those jobs were either on a work program or they were very, very, very temporary, like, did not last more than a few days or a few weeks. But I did complete my work program when I worked for the Samaritan Center. And my employment just came to an end when the program ended. I was never the person to take jobs lightly when I was working. I think that that's a pretty fair statement. When money is involved in any situation, I don't take it lightly at all. I might get paid to be at a place, but I'm going to be professional. I'm going to be serious. This wasn't always the case, though. When I was 17 to 18 is when I was first approved for SSI. If you're not familiar with SSI, it's it's an income program dished out by the government. It's kind of like welfare. I had to go through extensive tests and interviews and everything in order to even get it. I had to go through multiple hospitalizations, diagnoses, prove that I couldn't work at the time due to all sorts of different things going on in my life. One of those disabilities included me having lost my eye, so I had to kind of like readjust to life. I was very afraid to drive, along with the mental health diagnoses that I had and still have. I guess I should start by saying too, I'm no longer on SSI. And one of the things that I kind of want to talk about here, SSI, and I've said this on a TikTok video, and so I'm going to play the TikTok that I'm talking about right now.
The car don't you just sign up for disability? Like it's some sort of get out of work free card.
First off, go watch his video. It's the smartest video that I've seen all day. And I just want to say I completely agree. As a person who used to be on disability, this is exactly what I was going through. I wanted to advance my life. No matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't. Can't get a car loan. Can't get a student loan. Not to mention the limitations that they put on you for collecting disability. The humiliation that society inflicts on you for collecting disability. At one point, this was something that I depended on. A lot of people still depend on it. And to have to depend on it while also having to deal with the humiliation is just too much. And I struggle every fucking day. Fighting so I don't have to go back on disability. Though the way that my life is working, I might just go back. I don't know where this person lived, but $700 isn't even enough to cover half of my rent. So yeah, it's hard. Don't glamorize it. Don't give pity. Give understanding. Being on disability is not glamorous.
Grandma, why don't you just sign up for disability?
So, oh, I'm having... Okay. So yeah, I used to be on disability from ages 18... or 17 or 18... to, I want to say, 28 is when I was officially off of it. Around ages 26, 27-ish is when I started this Ticket to Work program where I could work and slowly get it acclimated to the world of the workforce. And I've often had people tell me of like, why the hell would you want to go back to work? Like working fucking sucks. And like what people really don't understand that I say in that video, getting a car loan is impossible. Like you literally cannot get a car loan being on disability. I couldn't get basic things in my life. My life was slowed down quite a bit. I couldn't get into college because I didn't have a way to, pay for it. They wouldn't, based on my income, I couldn't get a student loan. Because I was on disability, I couldn't get a student loan. And people want to think that these programs are just literally something just to basically have the government feed you or clothe you or whatever. Or like this is people's excuses so then they can sit around and play video games all fucking day. Which is a disgusting point of view, by the way. And I've had people say these things to me. I can't tell you how stressful it is to... And I did this for years where I would manage my money literally down to the penny. Because getting... I think that my full... At the time, my full SSI check was... $822 a month. $822. That is less than, that's still less than what I pay for rent. It's less than half of what I pay for rent is what I meant to say. Money has always been tight for me too. Growing up, we grew up poor. There's always been some sort of struggle when it comes to this thing that keeps the world running somehow. And something that's very confusing to me has always been money. During that time, I had to do a lot of rent to own things. I had to get furniture basically from the street that like churches were throwing out. I couldn't really afford a bed, so I kind of had to get all this stuff like given to me. I couldn't really afford to do much of anything, so I had to have computers in order to advance myself and in order to educate myself, in order to be who I am today. what people really don't understand about all of these things that I'm really trying to make clear in all of this is money through these programs is extremely debilitating, and it's very, very hard to get off of, because if they overpay you, if they underpay you, and this was a constant thing for me, I was getting overpaid every other month, and then I was getting underpaid, so then I would get paid more, and then be, then I would have to owe that money back. But in order to, in order for me to do the projects that I had done in the past, the books, the music, even the podcasts that I've had in the past, were all funded because of SSI, because it was money for me so I can survive and so I can thrive. And that's kind of the missing factor here, the misunderstanding in a lot of these programs, that people think that you can't use it in the way that it's meant for you to use, because it is yours. In order for me to even get approved for SSI 2, like, this is another thing. I was driven to anxiety attacks. I had to get IQ tests. I had to get mental health screenings. There was so many different things, and it was very, very difficult. I remember the most intense one that I went through. I went to this building, put into a room with a woman. It was another, she had to do two IQ tests, and this was the second one. And prior, the IQ test was fine. And then this one, after she was forcing a panic attack to understand my reaction, and it seemed very inhumane, and I don't know if this is proper or how it's supposed to be done either, because it didn't feel normal. I ended up leaving the office shaking in tears. When I got into the car, I was hyperventilating. I was crying. It was a lot. It was a very, very dramatic day. Shortly after that, I mean, that was around the time that it was a little bit after I came out, but it was during the time that things at my parents were getting really hostile, and I couldn't really live there as a openly gay person and in a Christian household. Like, I just couldn't do it. So I needed to get into housing and get out. And fortunately, I lived somewhat near an income-based housing place. So I was paying about $218 for rent, everything included, and getting $800 and something a month. So I had about $600-ish left to my name after everything, and most of that went to paying off furniture or buying things so I can do my YouTube videos, or buying makeup, investing money for drag, doing things to really improve my my existence, really, because I was basically at that point, when you are given SSI, you're basically scum of the earth to some people. So I really wanted to do my best to advance myself. And also, too, I just want to say that I've known people to take advantage of the system, to really try and get SSI just because they didn't want to work, and they would fake mental health disorders and symptoms to get approved for these things. That's disgusting to me. putting that out very, very plainly. And so my relationship with money started off kind of late because of all of this too, and not really being able to hold a job or really anything. So I struggled super, super hard in that aspect. And I've given a lot of information about my family and my upbringing. And this is something that me and my oldest sister talk about quite a bit, is not really being taught how to take care of yourself as far as your money is concerned, and how to set yourself up for your future. We were never really taught about 401ks, savings accounts, any of these things, because once we had money, or once my parents had money, they would just spend it. Like they would get money and they would spend it. And also too, because my mom didn't work, we never had money. So it was never something that I was really familiar with. And up until much later, and I learned that money for me is, it creates a lot of impulsivity. Even to this day too. I mean, I just got paid yesterday. And I was thinking about, oh my God, what game can I pre-order? What cards can I buy from the card store? Like, you know, there are so many different racing thoughts as far as that is concerned. And impulsivity is part of so many other different things in my life that it's not really strange for me, other than the feeling that I get when I fight the impulse. So we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we are going to continue this discussion of money and failure. And we are back. So I guess how I should start everything is by saying, I've invested a lot of that money by investing into myself for different projects, whether that be the music, the books, the et cetera. And a lot of that money too, I mean, just in plain simple terms, $600 is not enough to equate to riches ever. And it takes a marketing genius to turn $600 into $10,000, say, for example. At the time, I wasn't really aware of the amount of money that I would need in order to invest in the projects that I really wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to do these projects. I really wanted to do music for a living. Like, I wanted to make records and sing and play instruments and do weird shit and be celebrated for my artistic ability. And I think being the generation that I am and seeing the singers that I did growing up, I mean, you're kind of given this impression that if it can happen to them, it can happen to you. When really that's not true. And like, I just heard today that like they're trying to paint Ariana Grande from into a rag to riches story. And that's just something that's not true. Like, she grew up extremely wealthy. You know, both of her parents are very wealthy people, and she grew up extremely wealthy. Rags to riches stories for these singers and celebrities are just non-existent. Like, it's a falsehood. It's really bad, and it negatively impacts you and I think that what people don't understand about some of these things too, I mean, this is a huge business. People's failures are a huge fucking business. Web development companies, they prey on this. Their job is to sell you a subscription, basically. Just so I don't, I'm not going to put any ads on this podcast, period. Just so, I can not risk anything here, but I'm going to do some insider secrets that can result in possible loss of advertisers in the future. Subscription services, website subscription services, I'm not going to name specifics, prey on failure. Because here's the thing. It doesn't matter if one person or 100 people use their service. That's all profit to them, because that's the subscription model. When you want to put an album out on CD Baby, for example, or Mondo Tunes or whatever the hell it's called, if you want to put music out anywhere, that's all profit for these people. They're not guaranteeing anything. Like, what they're doing is they're putting out a product. It's up to you to market and advertise it. And if they offer a marketing bundle, it's up in the air what will happen, because they can say you can pay for this, but that doesn't mean that I have to follow through, because there's no guarantee that it's actually going to work. I've paid hundreds and not recently. I've paid hundreds of dollars to advertise books that I've written on Facebook. Didn't see any of that profit in return. I've sold more books in person from person-to-person events than I've ever sold online. I have allowed other narrators to read my books in a 50-50% share, thinking that they would put in some effort to sell the book. And it doesn't happen. These people, these services are kind of a hoax, and it's not all naivete. It's what it is they prey on impulsivity and your ability to market yourself. And some of these tools too are used by industry professionals. And I'm not saying that none of them work. But take, for example, Amazon Kindle Market. And this is super controversial, so I think it'll fit in very, very well here. Amazon Kindle Market is flooded from end to end, from zero to Z, with awful, awful books. The market is so fucking saturated that it's virtually impossible for someone to just find your book. And then these writers, they come out of nowhere, and then they become instantly New York Times bestsellers. And there's a trick to that, really. Like, when it comes to books, I mean, you have to find yourself a publisher that they ask you what you want, and you say, I want to be a New York Times bestseller. And if they can't do that for you, then they're the wrong publicist. But anyone would know that you save some of your book advance to buy your book, and that's how you do that. When it comes to music, the industry is so fucking saturated that finding good music to listen to is very hard. And it's not just something that people can just hop into. You need a plan. You need a strategy. And oftentimes these services don't really offer that option to you. When I was looking into skincare and I was going to start my homemade lotions and lip scrub kind of thing, and I had talked about this previously, where I had put my entire tax return into this business venture. And what it really did was just turn into a sinkhole of money, because I didn't end up making any of that back. I was given really bad business advice on that front. And what people should know is that oftentimes these markets are very, very saturated. This is something that research and failure can teach you. When I was doing my music, and I had pretty good success on one of my albums, it had really good success in Russia, actually, which is really funny. When I did that, when I did that, I paid a lot of marketing, or paid a lot of money for marketing. And so that's why they say when you do these projects that you kind of have to double your budget. And half of that budget is going to be spent on marketing in general. Fortunately, making music for me was really cheap, and writing books for me only took time. It was the business ventures, such as buying the albums, buying merch, and reselling it, that really took a lot of effort, because it cost money and it cost time. Subscription services are one of these things that kind of prey on the type of person that I am, because I want to make a name for myself. And I use some of these subscription services because I need a website in order to host my website for the Madhouse channel, and I need a podcast host in order to host my podcast. And I don't do this for the money. I do this because I really enjoy it. I really enjoy podcasting. I would do it for zero money, you know, but in the end, it really does cost money in order to do podcasting. That's just the way that it works. I really have a lot of frustration with these subscription services. That literally they just put out a product and just people just cling to them. And it's not even just like this. So like I've done other ventures where developing apps and all these different things, and everyone makes it seem like it's this overnight thing that just happens. Like you can put out your app today and tomorrow it'll be number one and everyone will have it on their phone. A good example of this is Flappy Bird, how the guy developed that dumb game. And then overnight, he became so insanely rich, and then he was embarrassed or whatever. That's not a real story. These are falsehoods. Take, for example, Stardew Valley. Okay. And people can come for me all they want, but I believe that the game was built by one man over many, many years. I believe the intent of delays and the longevity in the building process was strategic. I don't believe it was anything more than clever marketing by Chucklefish. another one, and I'll stop talking about this after this one, but another one that we really have to talk about is when all of these videos were coming out about these people who were suddenly making thousands of dollars from dropship sites from Shopify is the name of the host. And Shopify's platform as well too is another one of these things that really push super heavy on people's failure in order for them to make money, because the way that they show, if you pay more money, you can get better services, and if you get better services, then you'll make more money. And a lot of these dropship sites were advertised, that were advertised on like YouTube and TikTok and Facebook, use platforms like Shopify, and if not like Shopify, then Shopify. People think that you can just make money off of these products by just like sitting there doing your research and then paying for this book or whatever that teaches you the ways of drop shipping, and it's complete horseshit. I've had to pull my parents out of so many different types of get rich quick schemes like this. And in saying that, I'm realizing how many times I have fallen for the same shit, but for different things. When CD Baby tells you that you can be the next big artist or Reverb Nation or Bandcamp or whatever Mondo Tunes tells you that you can be the next big artist, what you have to take into consideration is that it's probably not going to be you. Because unless you have the money to push your product, and also to a very, very smart business person behind you, like an actual business person. Because if you don't have that, then just stop. If you don't have a good advisor on your decisions, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. So many times have I been the victim of these types of things, and I've created websites too on like Shopify just to make see if some of these strategies will work, and they don't. The drop shipping strategies do not work. It's a lie. I've had so many failures in my life related to money that it doesn't even really begin to. I mean, we're 33 minutes into this thing, and I haven't even began to explain the level of, I don't know, waste I've done for some of my vanity projects. I was working on building a card game, and I had been building it for several years, and I wanted to compete with not necessarily with Magic the Gathering, but I wanted to be in that trading card game level. And I had written the rule book. I had done everything except pay an artist to design the card art for each card. But I had every rule. I've had every card, every ability. I play tested the game. It worked great. I really loved my game. And what really fucking sucked was when COVID happened, it gave me an opportunity, after I had lost my job, it gave me an opportunity to really deeply consider the business venture. It was me, my partner, and my best friend, and I needed to call the shots a little bit on how it was going down. I paid an artist for one picture, and that one picture was going to be of the main character. I paid $90 to have a very, very well done picture of what that character would be. It came into perspective after that how much money exactly I would need to do this game. It became so much that I couldn't do it anymore. And like I said in the quitting episode of the podcast, there's nothing wrong with failing and quitting. You know, when it was really hard. That one hurt me the most. Giving up on my card game was really, really difficult. And it wasn't just for the fact that I was reaching out to different publishers. I was reaching out to people. I had a Patreon going so it could get funded. I had been planning a Kickstarter, but then I realized, like, even to get a Kickstarter going, you have to have proper marketing. And the entire problem became about money and just not having enough. And people don't get successful without it. You have to have money to be successful, but how do you get money in order to be successful, to fund your own dreams? And it's a very difficult problem. And TV shows like The Shark Tank are one of those detrimental things where it gives people hope that they can just create a business and be successful. Subscription services as well. I mean, everyone kind of has their own their own foot in the race to become the richest thing, and that's kind of what capitalism is. I gave up on music, not necessarily because I wasn't making money. It was because I wasn't feeling very good about my music when my partner's parents really trashed me. Giving up is not the right thing, because I still record music. I just don't really do anything with it. And like the books, like, writing a book is fucking hard, and anyone who says that they like it is a liar. And I've written 4 books because I had good stories to tell. And I've been working on the one that I've been working on for a long time, and I couldn't tell you whether or not it's going to get done. But I can promise you that unless I have a list of people that are lining up to buy it, then I'm probably not gonna put it out, because I want there to be a return on my investment of my time, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. The podcasting is something that I've really always enjoyed doing, so I really don't care if I make money from this or not, but the idea of making money from something that you enjoy doing isn't bad. And as far as other business ventures that I've done and failed in, I mean, I've tried putting out makeup. I've tried putting out merchandise. I've tried doing like a t-shirt company. I've tried doing a lot of different things like that. The issue is that if you don't have a good marketing plan, beyond anything, you're not going to succeed in it, which is a really hard pill to swallow sometimes. And sometimes you do have to give up on some things. And failure doesn't necessarily mean that you can't try it again. It just means that, like, you just failed in this aspect. Try again later. The last thing that I want to say about any of this is really, as far as your dreams are concerned, I'm not trying to discourage anyone from doing what they want. If you want to do a podcast, do a podcast. If you want to be an artist, be an artist. If you want to write, write. When it comes to you investing your money properly, that is not something that you should take lightly. My brain goes on impulsivity 90% of the time. In hindsight, too, it's always 2020, so you learn so much from your failures, as I've learned so much from mine. But it really does take a lot of self-control to be like, okay, I'm not going to publish my book right now. I'm going to submit it for traditional publishing. I'm going to pay a marketing professional to market my book. I'm going to save up $3,000 to market my book for the next quarter. Like, these are real things that you have to do in order to be successful in your projects, because we live in a digital age where you really have to push your product to the people who might get it. And now we are moving on to the question portion of the podcast. And our first question is, what's the easiest way to make money online? And I'm just going to make this very short and simple, to the point. If you have to ask easiest way to make money, then you're probably aiming down the venture of a scam. There are no easy ways to make money online unless you are maybe working from home for a legitimate business. Also, I hear a lot of people are becoming accountants at home. Next question is, what are some money saving tips? And I don't have great advice for this, because it's really just basic. And if people are really looking for if people are really looking for financial advice, you've come to the wrong person. But the best way to make or to save money is to put it in a savings account that has a high interest rate percentage return, whatever that's called. And you kind of just leave money in there and you don't touch it. That's basically the easiest thing that I know. And it's not great, but having to stop yourself from spending money is kind of difficult. So learn some self-control for sure. Next question is, I want to start a business. I want to start a business. I want to start a business, but I don't have money. What do I do? If you want to start a business and you don't have money, then you need to wait until you have money and then start your business, because there is no one who's going to give a loan without significant assets I can say that definitely. Next question is, does money really buy happiness? And yes, there was a study that was done that said up to $65,000 a year, money does buy happiness, but anything after that, and it's all on you. So if you make below $65,000 a year, assess your assess your happiness, and then when you make above that, assess it again. And how can we have a conversation about money without talking about cryptocurrency? And this question is about Bitcoin. How do I make how do I earn money from Bitcoin? Bitcoin is money. there's not really a good answer for that. How do you earn money from Bitcoin? Cryptocurrency is similar to stock. So you buy when it's low, sell when it's high if you want to convert it back into US dollars. But the main thing about cryptocurrency is that you have to actually invest in it and stay with it. You don't just get rid of it as soon as it skyrockets. For example, Dogecoin was like a really big one for this, and a lot of people made a lot of money and then pulled out, and they're gonna have to pay insane taxes. So I don't know. That is you don't really make money from Bitcoin. It's very rare. The Dogecoin thing was extremely rare. Next question is, how can I overcome the fear of failure? And that's really easy. You do. And you do the thing. And if you fail, you try and take the positive from it and try again. It's really, really easy. How does one recover from failure? Maybe not. It depends on what you lost. If it's a business venture and you lost tens of thousands of dollars, then, you know. But that's, recovering from failure is different, I guess, in everyone. I had to go to therapy. I had to talk it out with different people and figure out why it didn't work for me. And oftentimes it's to the realization that an idea wasn't good enough. And honestly, too, that ego shock is worse than dealing with the failure itself. And that is it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Kind of putting myself out there quite a bit, being very vulnerable. There were some stuff that I omitted from this episode, which is why it's a little bit short. And I kind of really want to avoid the conversation of credit cards and all that stuff. Because that is very heavy. But if you want to know any of that, let me know in the reviews of this podcast, and I will definitely do a follow-up to this episode. Okay, so until next time, bye.